Bogie went forward. The new location offered one of the best anchorages in the South Pacific. Strategically located over 500 miles from the New Hebrides and just short of 800 miles from New Caledonia and only 1,000 miles from Fiji, it was the perfect location. The Tulagi outpost on Guadalcanal was evidence of a sizable Japanese force in the region. Starting with the 17th Army, headquartered at Rabaul, an enemy 8th Fleet, the 11th Air Fleet, and the 1st, 7th, 8th, and 14th Naval Base Forces were also on New Britain. In early August 1942, Japanese intelligence units picked up transmissions between Noumea and Melbourne. Enemy analysts decided that Admiral Gormley had ordered an offensive force to assault the Solomon Islands or at New Guinea. The warnings were passed to the Imperial Japanese headquarters in Truk, but were ignored. August 1, 1942. The invasion force was on its way to targets in Guadalcanal, Tulagi, and the tiny islands of Tanambogo and Gavutu, close to Tulagi's shore. The landing force would be composed of Marines. The covering and transport forces were supplied by the U.S. Navy with the reinforcement of Australian warships. The 1st Marine Division was slated to make the landings. 5 U.S. Army divisions were located in the Southwest Pacific, 3 in Australia. The 37th and 5th Infantry were in Fiji, and an AmeriCal division on New Caledonia. None of these divisions were trained for amphibious warfare, and all were vital parts of defensive garrisons in the Pacific. The 1st Marine Division began arriving in New Zealand in mid-June after the 5th Marines had reached Wellington. The rest of the unit's reinforced divisions were still preparing to embark. The 1st Raider Battalion was on New Caledonia. 1st Marines were at San Francisco, and the 3rd Defensive Battalion was at Pearl Harbor. The 2nd Marine Division, who would eventually replace the 1st Division, 7th Marines, were stationed in British Samoa, while the rest loaded out from San Diego. The Landing Force infantry regiments all had battalions of artillery attached from the 11th Marines. The news that this division would be the landing force for Operation Watchtower came as a shock to Major General Alexander Vandegrift. He had expected that the 1st Division would have at least 6 months of training in the South Pacific before seeing any kind of action. Combat loading took precedence over any administrative loading of supplies. Equipment, weapons, ammunition, and rations were positioned to come off the ship with the assault troops. The combat troops replaced the civilian longshoremen. They unloaded and reloaded the cargo and passenger vessels, often during rainstorms, which hampered the task, but the job got done. All division forces got their share of labor on the docks as the various shipping groups arrived. Time was running out. General Vandegrift convinced Admiral Gormley and the Joint Chiefs that he would not meet the proposed D-Day of August 1st and only possibly meet the extended landing date of August 7th. An amphibious operation is a complicated affair when the forces involved are assembled on brief notice from all over the Pacific. The pressure placed on Vandegrift was intense. The U.S. Navy ships were the key to success, and they were scarce. The previous battles of the Coral Sea and Midway had damaged the Imperial Japanese fleet's offensive capabilities and crippled its carrier forces. But their enemy naval aircraft could fight as well ashore as afloat, and enemy warships were still numerous and lethal. American losses at Pearl Harbor, Coral Sea, and Midway were considerable. The Navy knew their ships were in short supply. The day was coming when America's shipyards and factories would fill the seas with warships of all types, but they had not arrived in 1942. The name of the game for the U.S. Navy was calculated risk, and now the risk seemed too great. The Operation Watchtower Landing Force might need to be a casualty.